the elemental presence, representing the quality of thanksgiving, the element earth, inhaling and exhaling through the nose. Be conscious of the breath. Remembering that with each inhalation, it is not only that the lungs are filled, but every cell of the body breathes. Our cells are continuously dying and resurrected, resurrected by the breath. A field of electromagnetism that is grounded in the magnetism of the earth. Reconstituted with each inhalation as telluric magnetism, the magnetism of the earth. Fills us. Resurrecting the body and the subtle body, and exhaling, become conscious of how the heavier components of your life field sift down . Feeling the pull of gravity, which, as the Sufis say, is a form of eshq, a form of divine longing, the force which holds the soles of our feet so tenderly, so gently against the surface of the earth, the same force which attracts all heaviness, all of the detritus, all that we carry but cannot assimilate within our being, allow it to sift down, to sink into the earth as you exhale, to become, as it were, fertilizer for the new life that the earth is constantly offering forth as you inhale. With each breath, something of us dies into the earth and something new is reborn. Earth and the earth within our bodies is pregnant with possibility. As Ghalib says, sab kaha kuch laal gul mein namaya ho gayi khaak mein kya surate honge jo penaha ho gayi. Not only the tulip and the rose, only some, not all, only some have appeared in the tulip and the rose. How many more beautiful faces remain sealed in the dust? All right, now, when you're ready, open your eyes. We come to the second mode of prayer, and that is repentance. Admitting our shortcomings, our errors, our deviations, and realigning to the truth. We are all human beings. We make mistakes. But our greatest mistake is not in the making of the mistakes that we make, but in our ego's attempt to deny and repress our limitations. As Shakespeare said, "Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive." It is natural to err, but it is natural to admit our error and change, to grow. And in the absence of this admission, it is impossible to grow. The tendency of the ego is to deflect all criticism, and so it cannot accept its error, but rather represses it. But the error remains and becomes like an obscuration, a mist that gathers around the soul. And so, even as the ego claims its perfection, the soul becomes increasingly darkened by that which was suppressed, that which was denied, the shadow. And so it is only in claiming its shadow, claiming its limitation, coming to terms with it, that the ego can free the soul of the veil which covers its light. Because the soul, in essence, is blameless. The blame, the impression of limitation which surrounds it, is not its own. It belongs to the ego, and yet it has covered the soul. The soul must reclaim its perfect blamelessness. The soul has never committed any crime. The soul is always pure in its motives, in its intention. And that purity must be recovered, and it is recovered when the ego takes responsibility. And in taking this responsibility, there is a wonderful alchemy of mercy. We have only to see our limitations, to accept our imperfection, and we find ourselves suddenly in the presence of perfection. The nature of the divine is mercy and compassion. It is there whenever we are ready to receive it. In fact, the act of accepting responsibility for our limitation and pledging ourselves in repentance to change, to grow, brings us to a state of evolution which is impossible in the absence of limitation, in the absence of error. It is through our errors that we grow. One who has erred and repented attains truly a higher status than one who knew only innocence. That is the alchemy of the divine forgiveness. There's a wonderful story of the great Sheikh Abdul Qadir Jilani, the founder of the Qadiriyya, the great Sheikh of Baghdad. He was so scrupulous in all of his observances. He prayed not only the five obligatory prayers of Islam, but he prayed the tahajjud in the middle of the night. He prayed constantly, and he was always on schedule. But one morning, it happened that he was about to oversleep and to miss his fajr, his dawn prayer. But a supernatural being came and woke him, shook him, and woke him from his sleep. Who do you think that was? It must have been an angel. Well, it was a kind of angel, but it was a fallen angel, Satan. The Dark Lord himself came and awoke a saint so that he could say his morning prayer. So you can imagine Sheikh Abdul Qadir's astonishment when he was awakened for his prayer by Satan himself. And he asked, "What is the mystery behind this?" And Satan answered, "I saw that you were going to oversleep. And if you had missed your prayer and woken too late, you would have been so deeply grieved. A tear would have fallen from your eye. And the preciousness, the virtue of that tear would have been so great, it would have drowned the virtue of a lifetime's prayers in its beauty and perfection." So Satan prevented that act of repentance. But it's a wonderful example of the beauty of sincere repentance. It's not only in always doing right that there is spiritual benefit. It's in discovering our errors and making amends that there is the greatest growth. So once again, I would invite us to, for a moment, turn within and direct your attention to your conscience. One need not interrogate oneself. Just in the silence, open yourself to any uncomfortable feeling that the conscience may be holding. Something one regrets, something one wishes one had done differently. Perhaps it means for a moment being sensitive to the feelings of someone who has been affected by our action. Action or word or thought on my part did not represent the fullness of who I truly know myself to be. Therefore, it was an error. And henceforth, I feel that I must more fully be the person that I know in my heart of hearts that I am. And when I find myself again narrowing in my consciousness and therefore susceptible to erring in the way I have done, I will remind myself of that larger scope of my being and recommit myself to it. And then one must acknowledge that to the degree that one truly knows oneself, it is in the light of the universal radiance, the divine mind, of which my mind is a limited reflection, and feel the presence of a greater intelligence working behind one's own intelligence, and a greater capacity for love, the heart of the world, working behind one's own heart, and recognize that one has erred and one may continue to err, but affirm, if you can do so sincerely, the attention, the intention to open to the fullest possible degree. And now we invoke the archangelic presence, the elemental being, whose body is the very substance of the purification of repentance, the element of water, inhaling through the nose, but exhaling now through the mouth, conscious that the body that appears from the outside, solid, monolithic, on the inside is fluid, three quarters water, you are awash in your lifeblood that pulsates according to the rhythms of the breath and of the heart. And as you exhale, experience the descent of a crystalline cascade that flows down from the crown center, washing through all of the cells of the body, washing away the pollution that has aggregated, blockages in the flow of essence. Let this crystalline liquid flow out through all of the pores of your body, wash down through the soles of your feet. Washing over the heart in the left breast. Water becomes polluted when it is shallow and unmoving like a muddy puddle. But as streams empty into rivers and rivers into the ocean, pollution is purified, as Hazrat Maulana Rumi says in the Masnavi. Water speaks and says, when I am polluted, I return to the source of purity, the divine ocean. And so it is with our emotions. When our emotions exist within the narrow circle of a closed identity, our emotions become clouded. But when our emotions flow into the river of the human feeling, the feeling of humanity, when our pain merges with the pain of fellow beings, animals, plants, humans, throughout the world who are suffering, when our suffering becomes a part of the suffering of humanity, and then it is that our joy can contribute to the joy of humanity. As I have put it in a rubai, the bitter tear that flows into the sea dissolves into her liquid unity, and in the sunlight rises up anew to fall again as rain, sweet alchemy. Now return to your normal breath and open your eyes. I think we need just a moment to stretch before continuing with the modes of prayer. If you would, just stand in place and stretch. The third modality of prayer, and that is supplication. Asking for your need. Now, in our rational world, this may seem a strange notion that we should ask God for the fulfillment of our need, because we might argue, if God is truly omniscient, then God already knows what is in our hearts. And if God wills, it will be answered. And if God wills not, it will not be answered. What need is there on our part to articulate our need? But this perspective implies duality. God and us, God and the world, where in reality there is only one. And the divine answer to our need is in our very awareness of our need. There is no distinction. But when we make our need conscious with clarity of intention, something can happen that is impossible when we only wish for something without knowing how to wish. In fact, my grandfather said something very challenging. If that which you desire is not fulfilled, it is because you did not know how to desire it. Desire is an art form. And supplication is its way. Suppose you are driving along the road and you see an ambulance pass by. Well, you might think, I feel sorry for the person inside. But you might also take a moment and move beyond that simple sentiment and utter an inner prayer. Call upon the divine presence and pray for healing, for safety, for the person who has been in an accident. In that way, what was just a random idea, a simple reaction to something you saw, becomes a more profoundly assimilated spiritual orientation. There are so many opportunities to do this in our daily life, and we can also make it a routine in our inner practice to ask for our need. And in this way, what is at first an amorphous, inchoate desire becomes clarified as a wish, and that wish becomes concretized as will. Now you may say that it seems impertinent to bring our little wishes to the divine attention. But there's a wonderful saying in the discourses of that great dervish, Hazrat Shamsi Tabriz, in his Maqalat. He says, what can you bring to the one that has everything? Indeed, is the creator of everything, including of you yourself. What can you possibly offer to one who is perfect and has everything? Is there something that you have that he or she does not? And Shamsi Tabriz answers, yes, there is something that you have that God does not have, and that's exactly what you must offer. You have your need, and God has no need. And what you can offer to God is your need. Your need enriches the divine needlessness. In fact, it is perhaps the most intimate offering that you can make. Your brokenness, your incompleteness, that you put forth on the altar. And another great dervish of our own tradition, Baba Farid Ganji Shakar, said daringly, God feels shame. He used the word sharam, which really means shame. God feels shame to deny the request of a sincere worshiper whose hands are raised in supplication. God answers prayer. But the answer is not always, and I would add not usually, in the form that we expect. And that is part of the alchemy of supplication, that in experiencing our desire and putting that desire in the field of the divine presence in prayer, our own desire evolves and becomes more and more transparent to the divine will. The answer does not come outside of the desire. In answer, it comes within the desire. So whatever it is, from the most tangible need to the most exalted spiritual longing, that is what you have to offer to God in a state of silent supplication. So, once again, for just a moment now, let's turn within and search your heart for the need that is most living, most vital. And now we invoke element fire, inhaling through the mouth, with the lips just slightly open, drawing the breath as if blowing the bellows on the furnace in the belly. Exhaling through the nose, feeling the heat ripple out, the body warms, the flame rises up along the central channel, infrared at the base, red in the abdomen, orange in the solar plexus, gold in the heart, green in the throat, blue in the eyes, violet in the third eye, reaching up beyond the bands of color to colorless light, beyond ultraviolet, as heat is transmuted into light. The body is burning itself in constant combustion, transforming the dense and fluid states into the igneous state, a radical breakdown of structure. Old forms are purified. And in the breakdown of the structure, incredible energy is released. As Rumi said, I want burning. Burning. Reconcile yourself to burning. All that is incongruous with your ideal, all that is superfluous, let it burn. Love is a fire that burns away the lover, leaving only the beloved. Love is the longing that burns the substance of life and radiates the light of the soul. Let your ego be the fuel. As Murshid said, when anyone throws down my heart, it does not break, but it bursts. And the flame that rises up from it becomes the torch on my life's path. Just as the bodies are electrons are transformed in bioluminescence, the substance of the body is converted into light, electrons becoming photons, the body filling space at the speed of light. The aura intersects with the light of the stars. And now, when you're ready, once again, return to your normal breath. Open your eyes. We're moving very quickly now. We come to the last two modalities of prayer and the elements in the next 5 minutes. Invocation. Invoking the beloved. One may think of the words of Hazrat Ali, Karamallahu Wajhu, who said, pray to God as if you see God. When you're performing your ritual of prayer, pray before your ideal as though that ideal stood before you in person. Inasmuch as God can be considered a person, the universal person. Of course, that personality is perceived to each of us according to our ability. The heart is an organ of spiritual perception. Qalb, which comes from a word meaning mold, qalb, mold. It is the mold which has a certain form that receives the divine epiphanies, the descent of the divine self-disclosure. And we receive from that divine being who is in truth ineffable, indescribable, according to a form that we cultivate inwardly to receive that which is to be given to us. And each religious dispensation develops a certain form within the heart in which to receive the divine image. And so there is a multiplicity of God ideals conditioned by the traditions of faiths which prepare the heart to receive God in a certain form. And there is importance in receiving God even in a limited form, because it is in the form that we establish a relationship with God. And to merely say that God is all in all and therefore beyond form puts us at a disadvantage when it comes to realizing a relationship. We must experience tangibly the presence of God through our ideal, through that vision, that image, which constitutes the highest, deepest, widest vision that we can imagine. That is our God ideal. That which is best, most excellent, most fine, most awesome. All that we can imagine as constitutive of perfection in our psyche. That is what the Sufis call al-illah al-makhluq fil-itqadat, the God created in our belief. So we create a God ideal. It's not that we create it, but we prepare an accommodation, and that accommodation is filled with the divine self-disclosure. But if the heart calcifies in that form, we can receive only what we have already been given. But the heart that becomes soft, malleable, pliant, expansive, becomes capable of more and more, newer forms. In fact, the heart is capable of receiving a new face, a new expression from the divine face in each instant of time, which reveals a unique disclosure in each particular instant. And yet we are prevented from this level of access by our presuppositions, by our narrowness of heart. And so we are reminded by the great Sufi Sheikh al-Akbar Muhyiddin ibn al-Arabi, who says, beware of confining yourself to a single form and denying all else, for much good would elude you. Indeed, the knowledge of reality would elude you. Be in yourself a substance for all forms of belief, for God is too vast and tremendous to be restricted to one form rather than another. So we must diligently commit ourselves to our own vision of God, establish a rapport with God as we experience the divine presence, and yet always be prepared for new dispensations, new disclosures from the ideal, not to make an idol of the ideal. For there comes a moment when what is coming through cannot be confined to the form that we have hitherto known, and the form must be shattered. And as that form is shattered, we too are shattered in our understanding. So, in silence, we invoke our own God ideal, that image of perfection which has been revealed to us and which is our orientation toward that which is ineffable. Inhaling and exhaling through the mouth. Beyond the dense, fluid, and igneous states is the gaseous state. In which we discover the immense gulfs of space within the physical body, the unimaginable distances between the electrons and protons, neutrons that configure our physical presence. Seen from this vantage point, we are not monoliths, nor even can it be said that we have a contour or even a form. And yet there is purposefulness, not mere randomness, but an ordering, a pattern. Our prayer is nearing the end of duality as we reach into the fifth modality of prayer, that is communion, at-one-ment, in which we can no longer say that it is we who pray. There is only unity. As Moshe so beautifully describes in a poem, when thou didst sit upon thy throne with a crown upon thy head, I did prostrate myself upon the ground and called thee my Lord. When thou didst stretch out thy hands in blessing over me, I knelt and called thee my Master. When thou didst raise me from the ground, holding me with thine arms, I drew closer to thee and called thee my beloved. But when thy caressing hands held my head next to thy glowing heart, and thou didst kiss me. I smiled and called thee myself. Without personality, beyond time and space, a state where you are now as you have always been and will always be. Hear my words this morning come to an end. I appreciate your presence of heart and attentiveness. And I hope that something has been said that will have meaning for you. But as my grandfather often said, take what you need and leave the rest. Could we rise and say together the prayer Khatum? O thou, who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide us. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit, and unite us all in thy perfect being.